Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
There's a high fly ball
from KMOX Sports.
That's hit deep to left field, and it's a gutter.
Big fly, Nolan Arenado. There's a moment for you.
Welcome to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And the driving jam time.
And the Billikens win this one.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm, because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
Comeback pattern caught. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Now, Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, so I got one last bit of baseball I want to start with in this hour, and then we're going to start moving around a little bit. I want to talk some Blues, big win last night. And do want to do a little bit more on college football. It was interesting. Brian Kelly was introduced at LSU today. And I don't think, you know, again, I mentioned this last night, but I don't have a big problem with coaches changing jobs for whatever reason. I mean, look, it's your career. You can go where you want to go and no problem with that. I do think the way that they do things is often terribly, terribly wrong. And part of that is because the way their job is set up, they're dictators. You know, college football coaches, even NFL coaches, they're dictators. No matter what they do, they just decide something and they do it. And they don't have to explain anything to anybody. They're the big dog. And I think that plays into why some of how they handle these things goes poorly. But there was actually something interesting that Brian Kelly said that I'm going to get into later on. And not necessarily a way of ripping him, just more of an interesting observation about where things are in college football right now. And where I think there actually is some truth to part of his explanation for why he went to LSU. I mean, look, he went to LSU in large part because he's getting a 10-year, $95 million deal. And also, though, you can recruit a different type of player to LSU that you can at, for example, Notre Dame. I mean, by that, I mean, you know, when it comes to grades, you don't have as many limitations at the big public schools as you do at a highly regarded private institution with an academic reputation that they want to maintain. It's definitely a more of a challenge. We'll get to that stuff a little bit later on. All right, wrapping up on the Cardinal stuff, I mentioned a couple more players that I think we should be paying attention to that are internal options for the Cardinals to provide depth and to provide some performance as the season goes along. Maybe even some of it from opening day. And as I said last hour, I don't think we need to analyze Nolan Gorman anymore. We all know he's the big offensive prospect, their number one prospect, a power guy that's, when he's ready, will be here. That's the kind of prospect that Nolan Gorman is. When he's ready, assuming there are no service time concerns, I don't know what we're going to get coming out of the lockout, but we'll see. But basically, when he's ready and it's no longer prohibitive when it comes to long-term contract control, he will be in the major leagues. Same thing is true, I think, for Matthew Liberatore. And I've already touched on Juan Yepes, who I think has a chance to be a helpful player pretty early on in 2022 based on his 2021 performance and the fact that he has a little positional versatility. The only negative on Yepes is that he's right-handed hitter and the Cardinals have a lot of right-handed bats, but whatever. I mean, if he hits, he hits. But there are a couple of guys, and I did mention their names last segment, but there are a couple of guys that I have particular interest in coming into 2022. One of them is Zach Thompson. Now, Thompson had some significant issues in 2021. I mean, you know, his walk rate was way up. I mean, he walked 57 batters in just 93 innings, gave up a lot of hits, too. I mean, he struggled at AAA. Now, keeping in mind, though, that prior to 2021, Zach Thompson had exactly 15 innings of professional baseball under his belt. You know, he was drafted in 2019. He made 13 appearances, all but two of them in relief, only threw 15 innings. And he did that at rookie ball and then Palm Beach. So high A at that time, low A now, but high A at that time. And he made the jump to AAA. What Zach Thompson has, though, is some really interesting stuff. And you know, he had a really good run in the Arizona Fall League, which is interesting to me because that's, again, you know, when you think about the Arizona Fall League, you have to understand two things. One, a lot of the best prospects in baseball are there. Two, it's a really good hitters league because in Arizona, you're playing at high elevation. There's a lot of offense in Arizona, whether it's spring training or in the minor leagues or whatever. There's a lot of offense there. So the fact that he had a really good run there is really encouraging. Now, I don't know that based on the control problems and all of that, that you'd be looking at Thompson as a solution as a starter this year. I mean, you know, he's kind of in the Oviedo mode when it comes to command right now. But as a lefty with a pretty good size fastball, and by that, you know, I'm talking, you know, guy that when he starts is low 90s, but as a reliever probably could be throwing 94, 95 in shorter stints. As a guy who, according to the scouting reports on MLB.com, is a guy that has a plus slider and a plus curveball and an average changeup. So you got a guy with a good repertoire that could be a useful reliever. I'll be interested. Again, I'm not talking about on opening day or anything like that. We're talking about building depth, right? I mean, the Cardinals still have some major league free agents to address. And again, we've talked about it. Mo has mentioned it too. They're looking at the bullpen with Luis Garcia signing with the Padres today, or at least agreeing to a deal today. You've got a spot in the pen that you need to fill from last year. And there are good proven relievers out there that are not going to be major financial investments that you can look at. I'm assuming they're going to land one of those people. And then some other depth people, you know, someone that could be a swing man or maybe the guy that you can stash at AAA who can be called up if you need a starter. Jake Woodford fits into that too. But they're going to want more depth. And the other thing would be, of course, a DH, ideally a left-handed bat, because you've got a lot of right-handed bats, but ideally a left-handed bat that could DH, assuming the DH comes in this year as expected. But, you know, these guys that I'm talking about now are guys that could make an impact. Now, here's a guy that, and Thompson is one. I'll be curious to see if he's a potential bullpen option at some point in 2022. I mean, again, could be a starter, and I'm assuming they'll work him as a starter until they don't need to anymore. But, you know, that said, I think he's a guy that could have a nice leap this year. Now, the guy that is really interesting to me, and I saved him for last because of this, because he's interesting, is Brendan Donovan. Now, this is a player who can do a little bit of everything. He plays all over the infield. He's a third baseman by trade, but he can play all over the infield. He's a left-handed bat, so that's an important element here. He's a left-handed bat. He's a 2018 draft pick, so he doesn't have a super long minor league history, but what minor league history he has shows that he's a pretty good hitter. And in 2021, he played at three levels. He played at Peoria, so he played at high A, and then he also played at double A and triple A. And, you know, double A is where he spent most of his time. But here's the thing. Pretty good and equal numbers across the board as he went along. He hit 295 at high A, 319 at double A, 288 at triple A. No big change there, right? I mean, a little jump at double A, but overall, not much different. On base percentage, 385 in A ball, 411 at double A, 389 at triple A. So what you're seeing, right, is a guy that's a left-handed bat who doesn't strike out at an unusual rate. He had 391 at bats, struck out 77 times. Walked 50 times, so again, good on-base skills, lefty, got some pop, 21 total doubles, 12 home runs, stole 19 bases as well, and then went to the Arizona Fall League and kept on hitting there. And that's what intrigues me about Donovan, is positional versatility, left-handed bat. He hit at three different levels in 2021. Not a lot of variation. His AAA numbers were the same as his high A numbers. And I think what's important here is understanding that that's a skill set that could be needed with the Cardinals, right? Think about it. They just let Jose Rondon go. So that's a utility guy. Guy can play a little outfield, plays all over the infield, but he's a right-handed bat, and you've got a lot of those. You know, when you're looking at the left-handed bat, something that is very much desired right now because of how the team is heavily right-handed, it's interesting to me that, you know, this is a guy that is now close. And keep in mind, he's not a baby. He's not a super young guy. I mean, Brandon Donovan is 24 years old. And I'm going to look this up real quick because I don't want to forget. So his birthday is, here you go. His birthday's in January. So he's going to be 25 when it's time to report to spring training. So this is not a player that you're looking at and saying he needs more years in the minor leagues. By the way, in Arizona Fall League, Donovan hit .308 with a .422 on base percentage. Hit a couple of home runs and five doubles in 15 games. So essentially, he continued this production. So this is a left-handed bat who can play multiple positions and who's at an age coming into this year. He's going to be 25 this year, where you're not looking at him and saying, no, this is a long-term developmental player. This is like, all right, hey, if he shows us something in spring training, this could be a player that helps. So when you wonder, why did they let, you know, Rondon just go? It's because a guy like this is on the way, and this guy's not far away, and he's shown that he can hit at three different levels. He hit in the Arizona Fall League, bats left-handed, and can move around the infield. Does that not sound like a player that would be useful? I think it does. I mean, just me. So I wanted to get to that, and we'll talk more about these players and maybe get some guests on to talk some about some of these players that could be internal options for help later on as we go through these next couple of months, because let's be honest, these next couple of months, we're going to need to manufacture some baseball talk because there's just not going to be the normal off-season stuff. There will be labor stuff, but it's not going to be the normal off-season stuff. What we're going to get into, and by the way, what's going to take up a lot of that time over the course of the next couple of months, it's going to be Blues hockey. And I'm hoping that the Blues will be giving us more positive and fun stuff to talk about, like last night. Now, I do really hate being overly dramatic, and I'm not going to be. I just want to calmly talk about how last night showed a bit of what the Blues are capable of, and I'm hoping that last night is a jumping-off point for the team to stabilize and start to perform better. I'll explain what I mean coming up next here on KMOX. All right, got to turn our attention to the Blues here in a couple seconds. We did get some news in the last few minutes. I mentioned the Marcus Stroman contract at the beginning of the show. He announced on Twitter that he was signing with the Cubs. About as good a source as you're going to get, right? Well, that is not only obviously a done deal with him announcing it on Twitter, but now we're starting to get some of the details. And I think these details are really interesting. First of all, Stroman's getting 3 years and $71 million guaranteed. Okay, so $23.7 million per year, essentially. It's like 23.7 million dollars a year, roughly. So that's a three-year deal is a little on the short side, which is I think the part that maybe caught me by surprise. But the shorter the deal, the more often you tend to get the higher annual average value. Right, the higher AAV, because teams are more willing to spend more when there's less risk. The longer the deal, the more risk there is. The shorter the deal, the less the team is exposed, so they're willing to go a little higher on the AAV. So, again, we're talking about, at the moment, Marcus Stroman, 3 years, $71 million guaranteed. Now, Jeff Passan is also reporting there's more to the deal than that. So he has an opt-out after the second year. So he could go in and make his money for 2 years and then opt out and become a free agent at the age of 32. And now he's not going to be looking at a 6 or 7 year deal at that point. But if he has two good years, he could opt out and end up, you know, maybe just getting this kind of contract, but for a little bit longer. But keep in mind, there are escalators in the deal that Passan is reporting that could make the deal worth much more. He could make as much as $27 million in each of the first 2 years. So that could be 2 years and $54 million, which, by the way, is more than Justin Verlander got. And he could also make $25 million. So it's $71 million guaranteed for Marcus Stroman. But it could be worth $79 million over 3 years if he gets all of his escalators. And I think those escalators, according to Passan's reporting, are related to innings pitched. So, I think it's here you go. Yeah, they're $2 million escalators for 160 innings pitched in 2022 and 2023. So he has a chance to make, again, roughly $26 million a year with this if he hits his escalators and everything else. But the bare minimum is he's guaranteed $71 million over 3 years. So it's not the exact kind of deal I thought Stroman would get. I thought he would get a little bit longer deal, and I was thinking more in the $20 million AAV range because I think I mentioned even earlier in the show, 5 years and 110. So probably not far off of the AAV. I just thought he was going to be able to command longer, but in this case, it looks like he's betting on himself a little bit and giving himself a chance to get back out into free agency at the age of 32. So there you go. I just figured I wanted to provide that perspective for you. So it's $71 million over 3 years for Marcus Stroman, and it could be $79 million over 3 years for Stroman, depending on, obviously, whether he hits his escalators. So he's either making a little bit more than $23 million a year, or he's going to make something like $26 million a year. Again, those are big numbers. And, you know, if he hits the escalators, it's actually more money than Justin Verlander got. Just keeping in mind that Verlander is essentially, 8 years older than Stroman. So, you know, he's also a lot better pitcher than Marcus Stroman is throughout the course of his career. So there you go. Those are the numbers. And I wanted to make sure that I passed those along and didn't forget to do it. All right. Since I interrupted the Blues talk to do that, let's just take another quick break. We'll come back and we'll jump right into the Blues and talk about whether or not last night, I know, again, I hate doing this, but whether last night could be a sign that things are going to turn around. Could it be one of those turning point games? Not in the sense that when you look back after a Stanley Cup championship and say, this was the game where it turned around. Not like that. Just maybe something that gives us a sign that better times are ahead for the Blues. That's next up on KMOX. All right, let's get to some hockey, man. It was I thought a really big performance for the Blues last night against Tampa Bay. I mean, first of all, getting a win against a talented team like that is always a good thing. Getting the 2 points, you don't mind, you know, the other team getting a point in an overtime/shootout game when that other team's not in your conference. So none of that mattered, but the Blues getting the 2 points really was a big deal, and I think the way that the game played out was potentially important. At the professional sports level, I'm not always all that big into like rah-rah things or, you know, super symbolic wins or anything like that. But I do think there were some characteristics shown last night that we need to see more of, and we saw in abundance in a really big game. And when you started the game the way that they did last night, because lately things have not been good. They've been inconsistent. Effort has been spotty at times. Certainly, the PK hasn't been good. There have been some, you know, just lapses where they're not getting off to good starts early in games. And we saw that last night. I mean, Tampa was up 3-0 in this game in 5.5 minutes. And then you had the fluky, weird-ass goal that bounced off the stanchion off to Jordan Binnington's left along the wall and then directed toward the net and somehow got through him for a goal. I mean, it is one of the, if you haven't seen the video, it's one of the flukiest goals you're ever going to see. And it's not a goal that should happen, right? I mean, a goalie should have the net sealed off in that play. It's just a bad play. And I know it's bad luck and it's fluky and all that, but it's still preventable. And you can look at it. I mean, at that point, 5.5 minutes into a game, Tampa Bay on your home ice, you've not been playing well, And you've allowed 3 goals, including a really weak one on that bounced off the boards, that super softy goal. That's a spot where a lot of teams would have pulled the goalie. Even if it was just to, as they like to put it, change the energy, you know, change the mood, whatever. And Craig Berube did say last night that, yeah, he thought about it, but Binnington's our guy. He's our guy. We believe in him. And, you know, he's got to play well for us to do well. Paraphrasing, but that's essentially what was said. And Binnington bounced back. He didn't allow another goal the rest of the night. That included the shootout. They had a couple of big PKs to make late and in the overtime with penalties called against them. And they managed. So you got better performance on the power on the PK. The power play has been really good. But you got better performance on the PK, especially in periods 2-3 and in the overtime. You overcame a 3-goal deficit against one of the most talented teams in the NHL. You overcame your own mistakes, your own flaws early, right? The slow start again. And you win the game 4-3 in a shootout. Maybe even more importantly, you got a little bit more production from a couple of guys you've been waiting on, in particular Buchnevich got his 9th assist in the game last night. There was that play that Buchnevich got the assist, the Barbashev power play goal. What a really nice, savvy play by Scott Perunovich. Playing the point, stepping up and skating in towards the slot, and that opened up a passing lane where Barbashev was waiting, and he got it through 5-hole for a goal. I thought that was a really nice play by Perunovich. But most importantly, what we saw was a team that recovered from a bad start. And from that point forward, from the 5.5-minute mark in the first period, in my opinion, completely outplayed Tampa across the board. And we know Tampa's a really good team. And look, by the way, the Blues are a really good team. They've been really, really inconsistent. They've basically been a 500 team since the 5-0-0 start. But they're also not a team that is in any way in a bad position, right? I mean, you're 2nd in the division behind the Wild. And you're 4 points behind them. You're plus 13 in goal differential, which is, I think, 4th best in the Western Conference, maybe 5th best in the Western Conference. But it's on the positive side, right? It's in the higher end of the playoff caliber teams. You know, there's only 3 teams in the entire Western Conference with more points than the Blues. It's Minnesota, Calgary, and Edmonton. So you're not in a terrible place, but some of that is the 5-0-0 start, right? Some of that was the hot streak to start. Because since then, 7-7-3. So again, basically dead 500. And they're better than that. But again, looking at the West, you're still better than all but 3 other teams out there. You're even with the Ducks. But actually, you'd be ahead of the Ducks because they've played an extra game compared to you. So you got a game in hand on them. That said, the West is tough, man. I mean, if you look at the conference standings now, and again, I know it's way too early for that. I mean, we're only, you know, Blues are 22 games in. I mean, you're basically at the 1/4 point of the season. But still, if you look at the West right now, you've got Calgary, Minnesota, Edmonton, St. Louis, Anaheim, San Jose, Nashville, Dallas, Vegas, and Winnipeg. Those teams are all within 7 points of each other. And then, heck, Colorado's only a point behind that, and they've only played 18 games because of their COVID shutdown. So, you know, that Colorado's better than where they stand in the points, right? They got 23 points in 18 games. The Blues, for example, have 27 in 22 games. So Colorado's one of those better teams. So what I'm saying is the West is hyper-competitive. And, you know, it's not going to be an easy task to finish near the top of the conference, but I think the Blues are very capable of that. Now, you know, I'm not real big on overemphasizing any one regular season game and saying last night was the turning point. Yeah, I mean, I don't like being dramatic about those things because I don't think things that happen in professional sports are often that dramatic. Sometimes we recreate that. In hindsight, like we'll look back on something and be like, ah, well, that's the day that it turned around. And coincidentally, it'll be like the first day of a winning streak. And it might not have been anything special. It could have just been you happened to play well in a given game and, you know, you got the win. And then that was the start of a winning streak. Then everybody looks back at that later on and like, that was the game that turned things around. I don't know that last night is that. But it was an important win last night. And, you know, when you look at the up and down nature of these last few weeks, what's ahead, you know, another game against Tampa Thursday night, the Panthers after that. You know, it's not an easy path. But now you've won three of your last five games. You haven't really been smoked by anybody. You haven't really gotten your ass kicked this year. Your worst games are a 4-1 loss to Anaheim and a 4-1 loss to Dallas. Other than that, most of your games are one-goal losses. You got one goal loss against Colorado. You got one against LA. You got another one against Carolina. Another one against Edmonton. Another one against Arizona. Another one against Chicago. And I'm trying to remember. Yeah, and the two-goal loss in Detroit was an empty netter. So really, that was a one-goal game. So you're in a lot of these games that you're losing. You're not, you know, nobody's out there beating you up. Nobody's kicking your ass. So I do think there are reasons to believe that the team can get going. And some of that's related to Jordan Binnington. Again, at times been a little erratic, but I liked what he looked like last night. I thought it was a big thing for him to recover after the three goals early, especially the bad one that just can't go in, man. You've got to have the net sealed off. You can't be. I mean, it shows you that even if you relax for a split second and you don't have everything covered, even something weird like that can end up biting you in the rear end. So, yeah, he's a part of it. And also, you know, you did it last night without David Perron, without Tyler Bozak. So, you know, and by the way, congratulations. I didn't mention this yet, but cool to see Logan Brown score a goal after getting called up by the Blues. You know, kid from St. Louis making his Blues debut. Very, very cool with Jeff Brown in attendance watching it all happen. That was really cool, man. Scoring a goal last night was awesome. He played 7 minutes and 54 seconds, so it wasn't asked to do a lot, but that wasn't really surprising. I mean, you kind of figured it was going to go that way with him jumping into the mix the way that he did. But, you know, you're doing a lot of things well at the moment. You've got players that really haven't hit their stride, which I think is exciting. And then, you know, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Jeremy Rutherford wrote a really good piece the other day about Vladimir Tarasenko, and he talked to a number of different scouts from around the NHL, and all of those scouts basically said the same thing. Vlad looks like the old Vlad. He looks like the guy before the shoulder injuries became a problem. He looks like the real deal. He looks like he's back. And obviously, that's really important. I mean, it's important for a couple of reasons, but and by the way, I would agree, like just on the eyeball test without getting overly analytical or even looking at stats, just by the eyeball test, he does look like the guy that we were used to seeing. He can beat defenders around the edge to get to the front of the net on a rush. You know, he's in the right places at the right times. He's creating for himself. He's got 7 goals, but he's also able to create for others. And one of the things that, you know, when Vlad's playing well, he's an underrated passer. He's always been pretty good. We always know him as the goal scorer, right? I mean, you know, there was that 5-year stretch for a while there where the only player in the league that had more even strength goals than Vlad was Alex Ovechkin. Like, he's known as the goal scorer, but he's also been an underrated passer, and we're seeing some of that this year too. So I thought that was a really encouraging sign to hear from other team scouts that he looks like the old Vlad. So, you know, he's helping you now, and he can help you on a playoff push or maybe even in the playoffs. But if he's going to hold to the trade demand and he's going to, you know, he wants to get out of town, you can get something for this guy. You can get something of quality for a player that's playing at this level. And I didn't do the math. I probably should have before I did this. But, you know, he's playing at a level where if he can do this all season long, he's essentially playing at like, what was it? I think it's like a 70-point pace, if I remember the right. Yeah, 71. So, you know, it's a pretty good player. And he's obviously capable of more, but, I mean, that's a good player. And a lot of teams will be attracted to that at the dollar value, and by the way, at the cost of a return for what it would take to acquire that player. So either way, that's a great storyline for the team. And you're getting production from the new guys. You know, Brandon Saad has 8 goals in 18 games. Buchnevich has 8 goals in 20 games. So, you know, the guys that have been brought in to help out are doing the job. I really think a lot of the problem in these close losses, though, it's been a lot more about the problems on the blue line and getting the right pairings and you know, sorting through some of. I mean, look, they've had to sort through injuries. They've had COVID problems, but that's not unique to the Blues. All kinds of teams across the league have had COVID problems and had injuries. Like, that's not something that you would just say that explains it all, because other teams are dealing with that too. But it does help partly explain it. And, you know, they're a team that I still think has to stabilize on the back end. And part of the and I also think that will help lead to better performance, more consistent performance from Jordan Binnington. You know, some of that is on him. Some of it is certainly, you know, he needs to be better. And sort of looked like it was a good bit better last night. I think it's been fun to watch Mikkola contribute a little bit more here lately. You know, he's a guy with some size. He's a player that, you know, while he's probably not going to light up the scoreboard, could be an interesting pairing. I mean, it's been kind of fun to see what he could look like with Colton Parayko. Two really tall players who can cover a lot of ground, who can skate. And again, I just think that all of that needs to stabilize, and we need to find kind of pairings that are going to work for a longer haul. I think Krug and Falk work really well together. I know you've been messing with things out of necessity, but if one person, whether it's Mikkola or somebody else, can just settle in with Parayko for a period of time, that would be a big deal. It would be something that, again, could lead to more consistency. But I liked the look last night with Mikkola, with Parayko. I thought it played out well. And I guess we'll see where it goes from here. But so far, but at least last night, an encouraging game given the horrible start. And we'll look forward to seeing what tomorrow night looks like with those two teams. All right, stick around. I'm going to see if there's any news in the world. We'll wrap it up with whatever news there might be in Major League Baseball. I don't think there is anything really new on all of this. I think we covered that with Marcus Stroman. But we'll check that. And if not, we'll get a little college football in next here on KMOX.
There's a high fly ball.
Welcome back to the Meyer Jensen Sports Open Line.
And it's a gunner.
Big fly. Nolan Arenado.
Meyer Jensen, a personal injury law firm. Because sometimes the gloves have to come off. MeyerJensen.com.
And the Billikens win this one.
Touchdown, Kansas City.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, I was thinking about closing with a little college football, but I want to close with some baseball because I just got a question on Twitter that is both, to me, interesting to answer, but also kind of certainly not infuriating, but confusing is the right word. It's confusing to me, okay? So when I saw the Marcus Stroman numbers and I threw it out there, the 3 years, $71 million and all that, one of the replies I got was, and why can't the Cardinals sign him again? Is it money? They cheap, frugal, forgot to call his agent? And my reply was this, and I want to expand on the reply because I didn't have time to go deeper on Twitter because it's Twitter and it's not meant to be deep. I said, why would you spend $23 million on a starter when you have 5 starters under contract right now? Like, why would that make any sense? Listen, if you're one of the guys that's sitting out there and holding your breath and hoping the Cardinals are going to announce something on Trevor Story before 11 o'clock tonight, God love you, it's probably not going to happen. But at least I understand that. I can understand looking at the roster and seeing, you know, for example, Paul DeJong struggles the last few years and saying, wow, you know, a guy like Trevor Story would be pretty cool. Good defensive player. You know, guy that you can really count on. Yeah, I can see it. But like at some point, when do you accept just the reality of a situation, which is you have 5 good starting pitchers? Wow. Are they all as good as Marcus Stroman? No. But they're all starting pitchers that you're planning on being in your rotation on opening day. And they're all good. Like, you're not looking at, none of them are crappy. It's not like looking at your 5th starter and our 5th starter's Oviedo. We think he'll, it's not that. You've got 5 established major league starting pitchers. right? I mean, Dakota Hudson's a pretty good pitcher. You guys know that he's got a 3.14 career ERA in the major leagues, right? And he's 27 years old. So that's your Marcus Stroman. It's Dakota Hudson, who's already under contract and who is the same kind of pitcher. His career ERA probably a little bit better than Stroman's, but they're in the same vicinity. You know, Miles Michaelis, career 3.85 ERA. He's under contract. He's making $16.5, $17 million. He's in your rotation. You just signed Steven Matz to a 4-year deal. And by the way, for about half the cost of Marcus Stroman. Is Marcus Stroman twice as good as Steven Matz? No. Now, he's better than Matz. I mean, I won't dispute that. I'm not an idiot. He's better than Matz. He's not twice as good. Now, obviously, I still think you need to spend some money on the bullpen. As I've talked about, I think a DH option would be great. So I'm not saying don't spend the money. I'm saying you don't need to put another $23 million into your rotation. Oh, by the way, after those three guys, it's just Waino and Flaherty. That's all. So what are we talking about? Why are we mad that a team that has five established starting pitchers isn't interested in adding a $23 million a year pitcher? And by the way, a guy that could be a $26 million a year pitcher. Relax. I guess that's my point. Just relax. It's not going to be simple. You're not going to have five guys, and not in particular these five guys because of, you know, time missed because of injuries and all that. You're not going to get these five that are all going to throw 200 innings. But the solution to having a five-man rotation that might need a little help is not $23 million a year for another starting pitcher. I understand the desire for Trevor Story, or I understand, hey, bring in Schwarber, he can be the DH. I totally get those things. Those are not weird or irrational. They may not happen, but they're not weird. It's weird to me that a team that has five legitimate starters has people that are like, why wouldn't they sign Stroman? Just relax, man. All right, we'll talk a little more baseball, a little more hockey, probably some more football coming up tomorrow. You guys have a great night. We've got At Your Service coming up here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.